This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Boy, it has been an entertaining week for those following NCAA athletes on TikTok. Ever since the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that college sports may not prevent student athletes from profiting off their own names, images, and likenesses, a whole slew of players across disciplines have been seen hawking everything from steaks to iced tea, so many other goods and services, creating their own merchandise and more. Michigan athletes are definitely getting in on the action. July was day one when they had this opportunity. We've invited Andrew Kahn to talk about this with us. He covers University of Michigan men's basketball and football for MLive and the Ann Arbor News. Hey, Andrew, welcome to Stateside.
April, thanks for having me.
Could we just go back a little bit into what happened before the big decision that set us on this path? There are ways that athletes can now make money, either through merchandise endorsements or sponsorships, and a lot of people are exploring social media. But I do know that there were definitely athletes, say, with a social media presence before the Supreme Court made its decision. I mean, what were the rules prior to all this happening on how much money you could make before you'd lose your eligibility?
Yeah, you basically couldn't do much of anything as a student athlete. The status quo that the NCAA preferred, pushed, spent a lot of money to defend, was that these athletes were on scholarship, which that is worth a lot. It's continuing to go up in value every year as the cost of, you know, attendance at schools goes up. But that was basically it, you know, room and board. And they were able to receive, you know, merchandise from the school, apparel that, you know, that they would, you know, wear as part of their team, but nothing beyond that. They were restricted on the types of internships they could get. Studying abroad wasn't really a possibility just because of the demands of their sport. Same with getting a part-time job. They weren't prevented from doing that. But again, you're a full-time student, and at major colleges, at least, you're closer to a professional athlete than you are an amateur. They were really restricted on what they could get and who they could get it from. But that all changed very recently.
So now we're in this new era and money can and is being made as we speak. And yet I know that some schools like Michigan did set rules for how student athletes can use their name and likeness. Can you lay out what those rules look like?
Yeah, so there was a state law that was going to go into effect the final day of 2022 in Michigan. Other states, it was going to be as early as July 1 this year, which is why it's no coincidence that that's when the NCAA decided to open this avenue. But yeah, in Michigan, or at the University of Michigan at least, they modeled it after the state law and had some tweaks. Basically, they didn't want any of the student athletes who are representing the university to do so in a bad light. And they viewed that as any sort of connection with gambling enterprises, adult entertainment, alcoholic beverages, tobacco, things like that, and anything else that would essentially embarrass the university. On top of that, they couldn't have any deals that competed with existing contracts of the university. So what that means, it's a little vague, and we probably won't know what it means until it's challenged. But, you know, if University of Michigan has a deal with Gatorade, then maybe, the athletes can't do a deal with Powerade. Same with maybe Nike versus Adidas, things like that. A lot of gray area in all of this, and we probably won't know until someone tries to do it. But those are some of the ground rules that they laid out.
I had a question actually about apparel. There has been a long and sometimes shady relationship between the sneaker companies and college level players. And Michigan has this rule that you can't conflict. I did see that in Oregon, Nike found a way around the rules to make a deal with Kayvon Thibodeau. How long before something like that happens in the Big Ten?
It's a good question. Again, it's just, there's so much gray area, and I don't think we'll know a lot of these things until someone tries to do it and challenges it, and it'll probably end up, in court. So, we know that the Supreme Court in their ruling that preceded, the NCAA's decision, they ruled against the NCAA in favor of what was former student athletes on a very specific topic on how they could be compensated. But one justice, you know, went above and beyond, you know, to write an additional opinion that
Justice
basically,
Kavanaugh, yeah.
Yes, yes, that burned down the entire NCAA model, essentially, called it, you know, illegal and opened the door for a lot more than what we're seeing, you know, in these various state and university policies. So I think there's definitely more to come.
I've got to wonder how the NCAA is feeling about the millions they spent on lawyers for this case. So who were some of the athletes you covered that were first out of the gate, and what were you seeing them doing with their newfound powers?
Yeah, so I've written about several of them. There's a today, actually, a story went up on MLive.com about Chloe Mitchell. She's an NAIA, not NCAA, a different athletic organization, athlete at Aquinas College here in the state of Michigan. And she was making money as a, you know, do-it-yourself influencer on social media, mostly through TikTok, when she was in high school, before she enrolled in college. Continued to do so while she was at college, but wasn't allowed to mention that she was a college athlete. That changed last October. The NAIA beat the NCAA to the punch on this, and she was able to then, you know, mention freely that she was a college athlete. It didn't really help her brand all that much. She had kind of kept the two separate from the start, but, you know, she converted 2.6 million TikTok followers into, you know, regular five-figure endorsement deals.
We should say her sport is volleyball, and as awesome as I happen to think volleyball is, it usually doesn't draw that kind of numbers just on its own steam.
Correct. Yeah, it was definitely her personality and, you know, the DIY stuff more so than her being an athlete. Adrian Nunez is a player on the men's basketball team here at the University of Michigan. Again, I think it's worth pointing out, he's not a star player. You know, he more often rode the bench in games than appeared in them over the last couple of seasons. But he's got 1.7 million followers on TikTok, and there's opportunities for him to convert that to some serious money. His initial foray into this was to sell merchandise with sort of his, want to talk about name, image, and likeness. He literally went that route with his image, kind of an outline of his face on t-shirts. So that's his first, foray into making money off of his name, image, and likeness. But there's certainly other avenues, you know, he could pursue.
Adrian likes it basic, we can say.
Yeah, sure. And then, you know, another one I'll mention is Yoke Gaming, a video game company, which, I mean, I'm already too old to kind of understand why this is interesting. But, you know, kids will pay money to watch other people play video games. They're not even participating. They're just watching. And some of these, you know, Michigan football players have partnered with them, you know, to try to capitalize as well. And we can get into some of the issues that company in particular and others are already presenting for the NCAA. But yeah, those are just a few examples.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking today with Andrew Kahn of MLive and the Ann Arbor News. He covers men's basketball and football at the University of Michigan. You know, another thing that happened this week that seems at least a little related. Hunter Dickinson, one of Juwan Howard's stars on the University of Michigan men's basketball game, indicated that he is not going to go into the NBA after all. He's going to stay at Michigan. It sounds like there were a number of factors affecting his decision, but didn't he say that he was at least interested in what the name, image, likeness rules might offer him?
He did. And, you know, I wrote about this as well, and I pointed out in my story, and I'll say it to you too. If he was confident he was going to be a first round pick in the upcoming NBA draft, he would have left school, regardless of these other factors. However, he was on the fence. So what did sway him was, you know, being able to experience the full college atmosphere, which he couldn't last year, and, you know, the opportunity to get some money in his pocket. I mean, he was, you know, he's a very casually confident kid. And, you know, he said, listen, I'm a good player. I'm a popular guy, and I've got this brand of Michigan behind me. There's no reason why I can't, you know, make some money off of this. So, yeah, he's not going to make the type of money he would have made as a professional basketball player, but it's something. And I think, you know, it can be a factor for sure in, you know, swaying some of these kids to stay in school.
This feels like it's just the beginning. Are there ways that you could foresee this changing things over the long term for college level sports?
Absolutely. I mean, the NCAA should have allowed this really from the start, or at least way sooner than they did. I think there was this concern that there was going to be these overnight millionaires, and that was going to be a problem for a variety of reasons. It was going to essentially, for them, take money away from, you know, the adults in the room, or it was going to give too much money to these young kids who weren't going to know what they were to do with it, and it was going to be a disaster, the end of amateurism, all this stuff. But in reality, I think it's going to be a lot of small-time deals, you know, a lot of gas money type deals for some of these kids. It's going to be rent money deals for others. And then for a very small few, the five-figure deals and maybe some six figures. Like, I mean, I've talked to several industry experts now for a story that's coming next week. And, you know, they basically projected that there will be such a small number of players who, you know, can make $500,000 over the course of their college career while they're playing. So I just don't think, you know, for the NCAA, billions are the norm, that this is going to move the needle that much as far as they're concerned. But for individuals, you know, to be able to get $500 in their pocket a month, potentially, it is a big deal. Now, how it affects how players actually, you know, train towards their sport, because that's the thing, really, at the end, like, the main thing has to be the main thing. If you really want to, you know, if you want to become a professional athlete or excel even at the college level, you know, you don't want this to take up too much of your time. But, you know, instead of playing video games or, you know, just hanging out in your dorm, if you can go record a clip for social media, or I guess get paid to play the video game, then all the better. But yeah, I think this is absolutely just the beginning.
Yeah. Andrew, was there any rush among the football players you covered to take advantage of the name, image, and likeness freedoms?
Yes, I think there was. We've seen, again, many connected with the video game company. Others went the route of merchandise. I have not seen any really major deals yet. I think the ones we're seeing right now are the ones that are being posted on social media, but there's absolutely the opportunity for, you know, more, I guess, real world advertisements and sponsorship deals. You know, Ann Arbor is a small market, but it's not, you know, it's kind of like that perfect happy medium of a college town where, you know, car dealerships or restaurants or, you know, any number of local businesses could benefit from, you know, doing a deal with a University of Michigan athlete. And I think you'll see more as, you know, as the fall comes and, you know, the season heats up. I think there's absolutely the opportunity for players, you know, the star players, as well as the player who just had a big game that week, you know, to capitalize on these things that the NCAA wouldn't have allowed before.
There, I noticed that Aiden Hutchinson and Dax Hill have entered a partnership with a company called The Player's Trunk. And there's a series of limited release T-shirts and things like that that don't actually bear their likeness. I mean, I'm not exactly clear on how this doesn't step over the line in terms of apparel deals that the university may already have. Maybe the university just doesn't see something this small as a threat.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, I'm very familiar with the Player's Trunk, and their main business model wouldn't really fly with current athletes. It's which is selling their gear that they were given while they were a college athlete. In some cases, you know, game worn stuff. In some cases, things that they signed. You know, after their playing career is done, to do that while they're a current student athlete, I would imagine would violate, you know, NCAA rules. But going in and, you know, selling other gear that's not, you know, in competition with the university's existing contracts, you know, that might be allowed. Again, so many gray areas, there's so many things that, you know, the NCAA basically didn't want to be the bad guy here. They've been called the bad guy for so long. You know, their president has basically been a punching bag for so many issues for so many years that they said, all right, you know what? States, universities, you deal with it. And then when you have problems, you can come back to us and we'll try to help you out. So that's where we're at now, or we're getting there. We're in the first stages of, all right, what are these problems going to be? Because again, it's not just the amounts of these deals, it's where the money's coming from. Because you know, if it's from a booster, if it's from someone who's got ties to the school, that could be a problem.
Jeez. You know, it's been a while since college sports were purely academic extracurriculars, like, I don't know, what, 100 years since that was right. The case. But we do have this idea that the college years are a chance for athletes to sort of pause before going into the trenches and the pros, and at least have the option of learning and growing for things that they're going to need once they get off the court or off the field or out of the lane. Do you think that there's going to have to be a new meaning for the NCAA with these new financial pieces in play?
Yes. I mean, here's the thing. Like, I was talking to one person in this space who works at a kind of brand agency, you know, and she said, like, if a company wants to work with, you know, Matthew McConaughey, like, and she wants to get in contact with him, he needs to go through his publicist, his agent, his lawyer, his manager. And like, it should be the same thing for a lot of these student athletes. But we'll see how many actually get someone in their corner to help them, because these are real contracts they're signing, especially if they start doing them with, you know, big companies, you know, kind of major multi-million, billion-dollar companies. They're going to be, you know, multi-page documents with a lot of legal jargon that, you know, they're going to want someone to review, because if they're shelling out this money, you know, they want the work done. I mean, that's the thing. Like, who's making sure that they're actually delivering, you know, on the contract. So, and paying taxes on these things, and, you know, setting up maybe trust accounts or whatever. Like, there's just a lot that goes into it. You know, the more money you start talking about, and it's interesting, you know, will the schools get involved and help? I know at the University of Texas, for example, they are. Will, you know, Michigan has a, you know, well-known sport management program. Maybe those undergrads, you know, connect with their classmates and help them out in that way. Like, there's a lot of ways to do it right, but there are a lot of potential, you know, issues as well.
Andrew Kahn covers University of Michigan football and men's basketball for MLive in the Ann Arbor News. He's also one of the co-hosts for Wolverine Confidential, a podcast that you can find wherever you listen to podcasts. Like Stateside. Andrew, thank you so much for talking to us about this. We're looking forward to more of your reporting.
Thanks, April. Happy to do it.